Have you ever said to yourself, I'll wait till I lose the weight. I'll wait till the pandemic's over. I'll wait till I move to that new city or get that new job. Have you ever told yourself that you'll wait to do something until you're ready or until it's the right time? Well, you're not alone if you answered yes. And today we're going to explore that a lot deeper with my new friend, Melissa Ruiz. Now, Melissa is no stranger to the stage. From community theater and competitive dance to first runner-up at Miss New Jersey and most recently the TEDx stage, Melissa knows the value of connecting with an audience. She has her master's in social work from Rutgers University and worked in higher education for almost 10 years before transitioning to public speaking. Now she helps leaders in their fields get over their fear of public speaking to create a bigger impact through her signature online course, Show and Tell with Mel. She lives in New York City, loves pizza, and her 95-pound dog, Gus. Today, we're going to give you some real tips, some real takeaways of how to face that fear or that myth, how to understand what is it that holds us back from doing those things, and learn how we can become more confident versions of ourselves, but most importantly, why that matters.
Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour, a podcast about all things nutrition, fitness, and life in your 20s and 30s, all from a non-diet lens. I'm your host, Katie Hake, and I'm a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and certified personal trainer. Join me here every week as I talk with interesting people and experts from all walks of life about their relationship with food, exercise, and their bodies. I am on a mission to help you redefine the word fit, to help you stop quantifying and start living. Learn to stop measuring your success by the scale and find your fears. Melissa, happy Friday.
Happy Friday. We made it.
We made it. Man, it's been a week. That's what I said before we started this. I said, if you have to just stop and restart, that's the beauty of podcasting, because I imagine our brains are both a little scattered come Friday. Yeah. So excited to have you. I love just your story, and I'm so excited for our listeners to hear about it. So tell us about yourself. Like, what's your story?
What's my story? I love this question. As a public speaking coach with a storytelling focus, that's my favorite question. Okay, I'll take you back to 1986. No, I'm just kidding. I am a Jersey girl, born and raised, small town in West Deptford, New Jersey. Very rare people will know where that is. I usually have to say like 20 minutes south of Cherry Hill, but super small town. I did my first pageant when I was 11 years old. I competed in the Miss America organization when I turned 18. I was first runner-up to Miss New Jersey. I went to Catholic school up until college.
Me too.
So uniform, yeah. All girls high school. And then when I went to college is when I went to my first quote unquote public school. I went to Rutgers, got my master's in social work there as well, and then did nothing with it. No.
Like a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of transferable skills, but didn't necessarily go into social work. I worked in residence life. So when I was in college, I was an RA, helped pay for room and board and stuff like that. And I kind of stuck with it. I was in higher ed for 10 years after I graduated with my master's, from res life to orientation and leadership to academic advising. I think I worked in nearly every department except for straight up academics and athletics.
Wow.
Which was a lot of fun. We were talking before about my love of collaboration. It was really an awesome time to dabble, see what departments were a good fit, who could work together, how could we bridge the gap between academic affairs and student affairs. So this was a lot of fun. After that, I transitioned to the dark side of public speaking. My primary audience was now who I used to serve directly when I worked in higher ed. So it was just a weird kind of brain split.
How that all comes together. Yeah.
Yeah. And I did that for 5 years. And then in 2019, at the end of 2019, I thought it'd be cool to go to fitness full time. And then the world shut down and I pivoted to public speaking. The P word of 2020. I feel like that's another one. So I read this article that there's certain words that we want to just eliminate. Unprecedented was one of them. And I think pivot needs to be added to that list.
I have heard about quite a bit of pivoting this year as well. Yeah.
So it's been an adventure. But you know what? As bad as 2020 was, for me anyways, there are moments that I wouldn't be here talking to you had it not been for what 2020 was able to present to me. It was stressful. You know, you have those moments of, was I exposed? Do I quarantine? I have to travel. Do I get on a plane? That's scary, this up and down. And, you know, I lost a friend in April, and I've had some friends lose several family members. Like, it was a tough year. You can't sugarcoat it. It was pretty crappy. But there were moments too of growth and resilience that we wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
Yeah, I definitely can agree with that on so many levels. And today, how appropriate, we're talking about that, you know, statement or that belief that I'll start when I'm ready. And it sounds like you've had many moments in your life with this coming up. So I want to start with your transition to become a fitness professional. Were you always teaching fitness? I also started my group fitness career in college. I feel like that's just was the best ever. The students, the energy was so exciting. So how did you become a fitness professional, and what led you to decide to make that huge jump of like, all right, I'm going to do it full time? Because that is scary for anybody listening.
Ooh, it's petrifying.
Not in the fitness industry. Like, it's a different world.
And in New York City. So I'll get there. My first introduction to fitness was through competing in pageants. A portion of, in particular, when I was 18 in the Miss America system, a portion of competition was swimsuit. And, you know, that's normal. Get on stage in swimsuit and 8-inch heels, normal. And smile and don't fall. So there's a lot of pressure for the fit, trim, six pack. And as a Puerto Rican curvy woman, that was hard to come by. I couldn't look like the girls next to me. I have a big butt. So that was a lot of pressure there. But even before that, I think a lot of my fitness or my fitness mindset came from my time as a competitive dancer. Tap, jazz, ballet, lyrical. And I guess at the time, I don't think looking back, I considered it fitness. This was my sport. So dance practice and rehearsals, those weren't workouts. Those were like intense sessions of like, no, we got to fix that, point the toe harder, bend. But like, this was just fixing the body and how it was supposed to look and the angles it created, more so than I got my steps in, right? It was very different. And lucky enough, the mentality that you see a lot of ballet dancers and a lot of eating disorders, I was really lucky looking back. I would have like a little personal pizza before I went into dance practice. So that the culture there of the relationship between food and dance and sport, I find myself very lucky to not have some of those kind of damaging thought processes and reinforced by others as well. I'm truly blessed there.
Yeah. Wait, I want to touch on that real quick, because that is an interesting background that you have, being in competitive dance and pageants. Tell us a little bit more about what that overall pressure was and maybe how you, I mean, probably easier looking back, like how it did or it didn't impact you.
Yeah, I got into dance. I was born with a very rare birth defect where my kneecaps were on the insides of my legs. So where the kneecap would usually protect the tibia and the fibula where they connect, mine was just like floating over on the inside of my leg, just, you know, on both legs.
Wow.
And so when I learned how to walk, the doctors snapped my kneecaps back into place and, you know, hoped that they would stay. And anytime that I was walking, as I was learning to walk, I had to have these leg braces on. Now, it was the 80s, so Forrest Gump, those leg braces, that's what I looked like with these wooden shoes. I couldn't flex or extend my ankles. And I was just kind of wobbling so that it would stabilize my knees.
Yeah,
those leg braces look much cooler now. I just want to put that out there. But the doctor said that the two best things that would keep my legs and knees in particular strong would be dance or soccer. Now, my mom took me to a soccer practice and I looked at the girls and they were sweaty and dirty. And I said, nope. And that is when she bought me my first tutu.
She's like, yeah, no, we want glitter. We want pink.
Yep. So to dance practice, we went. And I guess because it was a medical need and I didn't jump right into a competitive team, right? I was four. The fun of dance was allowed to spark in me. And I loved just being on stage. And as I grew up, people were like, you should do pageants, you should compete. And I was completely petrified of being on stage by myself. I was like, that's not happening. No. Also no. I need my group. I need my dance competition team. Like these are, I'm not doing it alone. And I would do theater, same thing. They would be like, oh, we want to give you a solo. No, thank you. Oh, we think you should audition for this part. Oh, that part has to speak and sing on stage by themselves. No, I'm good. I'll be on the ensemble.
I love being on stage, but yeah.
But not alone. And we're going to make some adjustments here. Thanks. And then one summer, I was 11. And I guess in a performer's mindset, it feels old, but in regular chronological order, 11 is not that old. But when I was 11, I looked at my mom and I was like, I think I'm going to do a pageant. And she's like, what? What? She's like, I was like, I think I'm going to do it. Like, why not? I, you know, a few of my friends had done it and they won or they had a lot of fun. And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, you know, the one that you're talking about is in 3 weeks. I was like, let's go. And I did it and I won. And there's nothing like winning the first thing that you try to like boost your confidence.
Oh, yeah. Especially as an 11-year-old, you're like on top of the world.
Like crushed it.
Yeah.
And it definitely was a huge confidence boost. And I translate that lesson so much now in my adult life is it's scary. Do it once. You won't die. Mm-hmm. Right? Because that's what my brain was telling me. And that's what our brain does. In these very scary situations, usually in the first decade of our lives, our brain has decided that is scary, that I need to protect the body and I need to protect how the brain works. And therefore, I'm going to label that experience as bad, as a threat, and we're never going to do that again. And I overpowered that. I got on stage. I did the stuff. I was nervous. Like backstage, I was shaking. I had like the nervous pees. Like, do I have to pee? Do I not have to pee? Yeah. If I pee, am I going to miss my, but like, I'm going to go pee. And every single time I get on stage to this day, every single time I get on stage, I get those same nerves. And I know it is a signal to my brain or a signal from my brain because we're not supposed to be on stage by ourselves, right? Fight, flight, freeze. Mm-hmm. That's what our brain knows how to do to protect us. And when you just jump in, when you just kind of train your brain and talk to your brain and breathe and say, we're going to be okay. We're going to make it. This is going to be fine. It's going to be an adventure. Then you're training your brain to accept that there's growth on the other side of it. And we're never going to be ready. We have to jump in. We have to give it a shot. And if we don't like it, we don't do it again. But if we like it and we grow from it and we connect and we meet new people and we learn new things, then it's something we should lean into and do it scared. Do it scared all the time.
You bring up such a good point about how our experiences as adults are so influenced as we were children, right? And it, I think it translates in so many different areas of our life. But so after that, you know, first experience of winning and, you know, it felt like this adrenaline rush, how did that kind of impact, you know, did you have moments where you didn't win or you had kind of that ego boost or did you struggle with that body image at all kind of moving forward?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think people tend to look at success or successful people of like, oh, they're an overnight success. And you're like, yeah, 10 years in the making. And after that, there were definitely, I kept competing in pageants, small town stuff until I was 17. And like, you know, when puberty hits, the body starts to change and you're like, oh, I don't fit into this costume anymore. Mm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, that you're kind of fitting in different places, in different ways, different stuff is, and I had acne and these big glasses and it was, ugh.
Oh, yeah.
And I look at young women competing now and how they look, I was like, did you not have an awkward phase?
Did you just skip that? I don't understand. Yeah.
Like 2020 prepubescent young women do not look like we did.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Ridiculous. Anyway. But yeah, I lost. There were pageants that I was like, oh my gosh, it would be so amazing. It's a national title. It's a state title. And I lost. That lesson too, our brain has to learn losing with grace, losing with integrity, being excited for the person that won, because on the other side of it is a different opportunity for you. In particular, I remember losing this one. I was first runner up in this one pageant. I shouldn't say lose. I was first loser. But I was first runner up. And a friend of mine won. And I, looking back, had I won that, I wouldn't have been able to compete that year anyways for Miss Gloucester County, which was a qualifier for Miss New Jersey. And that particular year, it was tough. My grandmother had just passed away. She had Alzheimer's.
Mine too.
Oh, terrible disease.
Awful.
But so she passed. And like 3 weeks later, I was supposed to compete in my first Miss America pageant. qualifier. And had I won the one to represent my town, I wouldn't have been able to compete at the county level. I wouldn't have been able to go on to Miss New Jersey. And that year I was top five or top 10 at Miss New Jersey. I met amazing young women. Like everything would have changed had I not lost. And so every time, you know, that cliche quote, when a door closes, a window opens, it's so true, because our path is cleared for something different. And I wasn't supposed to do one thing because I was supposed to do another. I wasn't supposed to be in one place because I was supposed to be somewhere else. I was supposed to meet somewhere else. Mm. My network was supposed to expand. And I truly believe there's energy far greater than us and far greater than our decisions at work. And we're here in this podcast interview for a reason.
I was just thinking about that. I'm like, literally, if all of the world that had our paths would have never crossed.
Yeah. One decision, one pageant title, one boyfriend, one meal, could have shifted everything. And that's really powerful to think about. And I think about that when, like, I used to run, and on those runs, I always think about how small I feel, especially when you're running in New York City. You just have skyscrapers and a river, and then another state is across the river. Mm-hmm. And I just always come back to how small I am in this universe. And just a speck on a speck, right? Was that?
Is that Dr. Seuss?
Dr. Seuss, yeah. Like, I'm a speck on a speck.
Yeah.
On a speck. And I don't know, feeling small makes me feel big, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel like...
It shaves away some of that fear, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That I'm not the only one. And when I remember how small I am, I know that my impact, that ripple effect in every decision that I make, has more power, because there's so many people in my network and in my circle that could be affected. Mm-hmm. And that's really humbling for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go back to, you decided, okay, I'm going to pivot into fitness. Tell us a little bit about what that feeling was like of, okay, I'm going to go for it.
Yeah. Oh, I realized I never answered That's your first okay. question. So my first like big time fitness was CrossFit. I moved to a new town, started a new job. I don't know anybody. What do? I like working out. I like working out with people, CrossFit. And that was my like, yeah, I'm so strong. I just deadlifted 300 pounds. Woo, this feels amazing.
So fun.
And then somebody kind of deposited the idea to be certified as a trainer. And I was like, I'm going to store that idea in the back of my head, because fast forward 4 years later, I got certified. And it was a side hustle while still working in higher ed. And I loved it. It was this perfect balance of 9 to 5, and I would teach 2 classes a week, right? 2 classes, manageable, mm-hmm. easy, make them sweat. At the end, they're just like, I'm not moving. I have to turn off the lights. See you later, right? Like, it's fun, really empowering. It's fun. And then people would be asking, hey, I'm going to be out of town. Can you sub this class? Or I can't manage this client anymore. My schedule just doesn't match with what they're expecting. Can you take on a client? So like, it would just be this little gradual deposit of more and more and more and more and more. And I was like, bring it on. Mm-hmm. And my travel with public speaking at this point, I transitioned to public speaking. My travel with public speaking was, I need a good word for it, horrible. When I say planes, trains, and automobiles, sometimes twice in the same day, it was exhausting. I would forget what state I was in, or my name, or to sleep, or to eat. And airplane sandwiches aren't the way to fuel your body. And there would be these gigs that I would do that I would fly out to the West Coast, speak for 90 minutes, and fly right back.
Oh my gosh.
I was on the plane for 10 hours for a 90-minute speaking engagement. And it was exciting. I loved it. But you look up one day and you're like, where am I? Why do I have vertigo? And why am I craving a ham and cheese sandwich from American Airlines? And then you just kind of reassess yourself.
Yeah. That's interesting, though. So many people think that traveling for work, I remember I felt this way for so long till I've talked to more and more, people who've had similar positions like that. I always thought that sounds so glamorous, it sounds so fun, but it's like this grass is always greener on the other side kind of thing.
Absolutely. And we in the speaker world, like you call it, like when you're on tour, the busier mm-hmm. season, especially orientation season for my particular topic.
Yeah, what leadership. Topics were you talking, and who were you talking to?
primarily college students, first-year students and student leaders, encouraging them to participate in college outside of the classroom. So don't just go from car to class, class to class, class back to car, join a club, leadership opportunities, you know, get involved so that you're not just this ghost that comes on campus and leaves. Yeah. And so summers, particularly August, September, were packed. Two, maybe three programs in a day. I would go do an hour keynote, drive 90 minutes to a nearby state or school, go back on stage, drive another. There was a little tour of Pennsylvania that I did. I did like a morning program, an afternoon program, and then like an 8 p.m. program. But wow, there was anywhere from 3 to 5 hours of driving in between the two.
Talk about mental and physical energy.
Oh my goodness. Like I contemplated hiring a driver because when you're on stage, for me, it's exhausting. There's this mental capacity, like you just said, this physical aspect to it too, because I'm all over the place when I speak. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get people to, you know, participate and raise their hand, and I'm walking over here and looking at somebody in the eye, mm-hmm, and somebody needs to be quiet over here, so I'm going to put my hand on their shoulder. And you're managing a lot. And then to get in a car and drive for 3 hours, I would have to pull over to the side of the road and just kind of like take a little cat nap because my energy systems, I felt like a computer, mm-hmm, right? 10% battery left,
yeah,
4% battery left. And then all of a sudden it's just asleep. Right. It's just dead. And so that started to take a toll, and it ruined a relationship of mine, mm-hmm, and it takes a toll. You know, you can't push past an empty tank. Mm-hmm. And things start to slow down. It gets less and less exciting. Lucky enough, I was able to select my travel. If I wanted to go the night before and get a full night's sleep, I could. Mm. But I know some people, when they travel for work, they're not that lucky, right? If it's DC, you take the 6 a.m. train, so you're there by 10 a.m. Mm. But I was able to craft it in a way of like, I need sleep. Mm. And if you want me to be a human at 8 a.m., I need to be in bed by 10 p.m. or else some other version of Melissa is going to go on stage and she's going to be caffeinated and like maybe half her makeup is done. Maybe the shoes don't match. It's not going to be cute.
It's not going to be what you signed up for.
Yeah, exactly. So finding those ways on the road to take care of myself, I would, you know, spend an extra day and explore the area. That was always fun. And my boss at the time, I call him an alien because he could do it and just plug right through and go, 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 go. And I would just blink at him with wide eyes and say, when did you sleep? And he would just laugh it off and go on to the next thing. I was like, absolutely not. That's not going to be me. Go you.
Yay. More power to you. Yeah. Not for me.
Yeah. I'm going to spend an extra night at that hotel with my nice king size bed. Thank you much. Mm-hmm. But it does. It takes a lot. And when we think about, and as listeners are listening in, when you think about where we put our energy, it's not just in the work that we do. For those of us that might be trainers, it's not just turning on Zoom now and teaching the class. There's writing the program for a client. It's deciding the time intervals for your classes. If you work a 9 to 5, right? We're not just signing on at 9 and signing off at 5. We're probably signing off at 6, 7, 8 o'clock, because now that we're home all the time, what else are you going to do? Air quotes. Mm-hmm. And even if you think of your 9 to 5 in that entrepreneurial sense, it's so easy to pick work over ourselves.
Which I think so many people are doing that now, especially
so
working
many
from home. There is more of this flexibility, but there's also, it's like this double standard.
Absolutely. And I think the work-life balance, air quotes again, it doesn't exist. It's not a thing. There's no 50-50. It is an integration. And it takes experimentation to figure out what needs to happen when, right? None of our schedules are exact every day. Something happens, we get a bad night's sleep. We want to take a 6 a.m. class, or, you know, me, I taught at 7 a.m. this morning. So some mornings I get to sleep in, some mornings I have to wake up earlier. So the rule of go to bed at the same time and wake up at the same time every morning, that's funny.
I love that idea. And I've written that down in my CEO planner that we both have now. We'll see. It's
yeah,
like you.
It's good suggestion.
It's a great idea in theory, but it's not always realistic for everybody. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You're like, yeah, sure. 10 p.m. But TikTok.
don't even get me started on TikTok.
Hey friends, hate to interrupt, but I just wanted to remind you, if you're enjoying today's episode, We would love for you to join us over on the Facebook page. Just click the link in the show notes wherever you're listening. Request to join, answer a few questions so we make sure that you're not a robot. And let's continue this conversation of how to be more confident, more fierce versions of ourselves.
So now you're at this point, you've slowed down on the travel. You're actually teaching people how to public speak. So tell us a little bit more about some of the common fears that your clients face and how they get to you. Why is public speaking such a big fear?
You know, I don't know that anybody really has that answer. I think some folks are like, people are more afraid of public speaking than death. And I was like, that's a rumor that spiraled out of control. That's published on the internet in places. But really, I think it goes back to that brain connection, is that it's been labeled as a threat. And our body will start to produce these physiological responses that will tell us to get away, to go away, stop doing it, right? We'll start sweating, we'll turn red, we'll break out in hives, we'll lose our voice, we'll sound really out of breath, right? Because our body is sending physiological responses for you to stop.
Yeah. And so
this is not safe. And that's my best reasoning, is that our brain, more so than anything else, any external factor, our brain has decided this is bad. Mm-hmm. And I realized probably about 5 or 6 months into quarantine and working at home that a lot of folks, and just this is just me speaking in my Instagram stories about, you know, the transition and work from home, and so many people's comments were, I dread going back to work. I forget what it's like to see a face face to face. I'm such an introvert. How am I going to be able to do this? So Melissa Brain goes, interesting. You know, kind of puts it in a little pocket over here. And in May, I had done a workshop and I forgot about it, but I had done a workshop about showing up on Zoom confidently. Mm-hmm. It was called Unmute Yourself. And
great title.
Right? Because everybody's like, you're on mute. Okay. Sorry. Yes. And I kind of forgot about it. But even in this workshop, the folks that were in there, not full on, I'm an introvert, but most of them upon reflection were a little bit quieter and were trying to figure out how they show up confidently in a space where their introvert is happy, right? They're on a screen, they're removed. There isn't this full image. You don't see my body. You don't see my body language. Mm-hmm. So the introverts were probably really happy in the first couple of months of working from home. And then we're going to open back up, especially my student affairs professionals. We were going to report back to the office and they all started to panic. Mm-hmm. Even the extroverts were like, woo. And the introverts were like, no.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
I'm good. I want my Snuggie and I'm good. And so I just kind of started to put the puzzle pieces together where public speaking is a skill that I believe we don't teach in schools, not properly anyway. Our first experience with public speaking was probably something called show and tell in kindergarten.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Forgot.
My course is called Show and Tell with Mel.
That makes sense now. Oh.
Yeah. But we weren't taught how to speak. We were told, bring something in from home that you love and talk about it. Okay. Easy for some, completely inaccessible for others. And then we reinforced that with go home and write a paper and then come in and talk about it. Go home and plan this, come in and talk about it. But we never broke down the communication exchange from my brain to my vocal cords to my lips to your ears. And that didn't happen until college, if you were able to take a public speaking course. Yeah,
which wasn't required for everybody.
It was an elective, mm-hmm. and it was probably on a list of electives and you probably took clay making instead or whatever, or ceramics, yeah. Right? And so I think our education system does a huge disservice in teaching how to public speak. And that is no fault to the teachers. Mm-hmm. Some teachers do phenomenal, right? They really break down what it means to communicate, but we kind of just throw people up there and we say, speak. And our brains have said, nope. And so kind of collecting all of this data, putting it all together, in August, I did a beta program. It was 30 days. And my course still is and has this storytelling approach where we're really focusing on stories from your past. Mm-hmm. If you can't talk about yourself, it's going to be really hard to be able to speak to people, because that's how we connect. We connect through stories, through relatable stories. You went through this, you did this, you experienced this, and you grew. You came out of the other side better, stronger, bigger. And if we can't even get to that level of, hi, my name is Melissa, I'm a Cancer and I love long walks on the beach. Like if that frightens you, then we need to take a step back and reevaluate how we show up in the world. Mm-hmm. And it starts with that foundation of confidence. So the first 2 weeks of my course, in the 8-week version anyway, we're working just on confidence. Do you need that power pose before you're stepping into a room? Is it breath work? Our breath is so powerful when it comes to resetting our brain and how we show up. So I have a guest coach that comes in and talks about just the physiological response of taking a big, true diaphragmatic breath and how it changes the brain.
And breathing, it should be so involuntary, but it really is. I know for even, well, you've been a runner. When I was running recently, I remember thinking like, oh my gosh, I don't even know how to breathe.
Yeah.
We don't realize how it can get so disconnected because of our brain. If we're we don't realize that connection that's happening when we don't focus on it. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. And the more stressed out we are, the more shallow our breath mm-hmm. gets. For some, it's a more shallow inhale. For others, it's a more shallow exhale. We're in this flexed position all the time and we're not extending.
As I'm crunched over.
Both of us. Yeah. As both of us are great. But so our lungs aren't even expanding to their capacity. And same thing when I was running the first mile, I'd be like, why am I doing this?
Right. What's happening?
And then you realize, okay, you're not breathing right. So inhale 4 strides, exhale 4 strides, get on a path here and let it develop. But unless we consciously think about what our breath is doing, we're all over the place. Mm-hmm. We're holding our breath. Why am I holding my breath? Well, your brain said, mm-hmm. right? We don't listen to that. And this isn't just about running or public speaking. This is about the job interview. This is about presenting in front of your coworkers, leading a meeting, having a one-on-one with your boss, right? Even these one-on-one situations, our brain is worried. Our brain is cautious, especially from being home. A lot of us mm-hmm. for so long, our brains were not prepared for this. Folks that live alone, the lack of exposure that they've had to other people, even eye contact through a screen registers in our brain very differently than eye contact when we're in the same room. Because I'm looking at your face on the screen right now, but to really make eye contact, I have to look into the green dot. But my brain,
yeah, it's so weird.
My brain sees a green dot, not your eyes. So the connection is lost. So again,
I never thought about that with the connection with the screens. Yeah. That's interesting.
We've gone through so much trauma. Yeah. Right? And there's levels of trauma, but our brains in particular, our ability to connect, our spirits, if you will, the energy that we usually share in a space is no longer available to us because of this technological
barrier.
Yeah. And it's damaging. And so when folks go back to the office, when folks go back into the conference room, they are petrified. Their brains have adapted, which is good. Yay. Right. Human evolution. Right. Awesome. Great. Survival of the fittest, I think. But survival of the fittest really means something different right now.
It sure does.
And it's kind of scary if you think about it. I think of the movie WALL-E all the time in these past couple of months where everybody's just kind of sitting in their little chairs, zooming around, and they forget how to walk. Mm. And I just kind of sit back and reflect sometimes, are we getting closer to that? Mm. Is that happening?
Yeah.
Is that going to be me soon? Oh.
Yeah, we can't let it. We have to be proactive. And like you said, and recognizing of, okay, this, if you have that transition coming up or what that can look like and how you can, what it sounds like is basically retrain your brain to adapt again, because it can and it will.
Totally, totally. And it's the preparation of it that's key. And it's having the conversations. Your self-talk is huge. And your consumption is another piece too, right? Garbage in, garbage out. If you're consuming news, 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 news all the time, your cortisol levels will be increased. Your stress, you will feel it. Maybe your shoulders start to crunch up and you have neck pain and you're not sure why. And at the beginning of quarantine, I was consuming so much.
Oh,
what are the numbers? What is this? What are the cases? You know, being in New York City, I was like, I'm not leaving the apartment. I was mm-hmm. stressed. And I was walking around like this. I was like, why does everything hurt? Well, because you look weird. Your shoulders are up. Everything's crunched in and you're not breathing.
Mm, yeah. Even just at the time of this recording, we heard that news on January, a couple days ago. Same thing. I was up till midnight watching the news and just realizing like, oh my gosh, like, It does. We absorb that. And I think we're doing so much more of that in this, past year that It does. It is trauma. I love that you, yeah. I love that you pointed that out, because there's this pressure to just go, 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 go. And now 2021, set your goals, do all these things, but we are experiencing, in a sense, trauma. And I think if you have other forms of trauma, like recognize
it's
that
just compounding.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's growing. And if you don't have access to a therapist or even just a supportive network, mm-hmm. where does that go? And I've realized too, in the past couple of months, I've lost touch with some friends, mm-hmm. and I say, nope, go text them and have the Zoom call. I know Zoom fatigue is real, but I, on the truly human level, I have to see them. I have to hear their voice. And I hope that they do too. And you know, it comes through ebbs and flows. We go up and down, but the intentional effort, I think, is how we maintain a human connection. Even if people can't show up, like I'm tapped out, I'm exhausted, I don't have anything left to give, but thank you for reaching out over this text and saying that you miss me. Like that, we have to start there. Mm-hmm. Or else some people can really just kind of lose it.
Yeah. I read somewhere recently that, you know, there's these, obviously these different pillars of health, and you'll appreciate this with your background too, right? There's nutrition, what we eat, how we move, but there's also the social interaction piece that is such a huge indicator of our health and well-being. And we're missing that on so many levels. So I love that you bring up that point of, we've got to be intentional about it. Like, recognize where you're at and how you feel about all that. And like, I've written that down as one of my goals or, you know, focuses is I want to have better connections, but what does that look like? That might, you know, it's one thing to say it, but how are you actually going to do it? Sending that text message, yeah. Said it, you know, we underestimate it.
Yeah. And it is looking at another screen. It is the dopamine kind of ding and that uptick, yeah. in dopamine. But at the same time, so is seeing your friends. And that dopamine is a lot healthier than TikTok or Reels, you know, tap, right. swipe, 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 right. swipe. I've even been thinking about doing a dopamine detox of no screens, no music, no audiobooks, no podcasts, nothing, nothing, nothing. It's mostly sleep, meditation, and food. And I'm like, sign me up. Mm-hmm. I know someone, or I listened to a podcast that led me to a video, and you know, the deep, dark spiral, yeah. of the internet. The only tech that he had was a camera to document his first dopamine detox. And he also did a fast as well. The only mm-hmm. thing he was drinking was water. And just some of the realizations that he came to in his life about his social necessities, his reliance on his phone, even to check the time, that even just checking the time, that feedback, that little ding in your brain of I'm important because not only did I check the time, but I also have a notification, that feedback loop mm-hmm. is so damaging when our dopamine levels are that high for that long. And I think back to too, when you said your grandmother had Alzheimer's as well, is the social interactions are one of the key pieces to keeping a healthy brain. And one of the things that they recommend for folks that are newly diagnosed with Alzheimer's is increase your social interactions. And I think of those people in this time too, in nursing homes, where the social interaction could infect them.
It's so sad.
And now...
So sad.
It is. That's the only word I can think of, is sad. How do we keep people mentally healthy and physically healthy? And how do we strike that balance in a world where one thing or the other could be the thing that kills you?
Mm.
And that's petrifying. So yeah. It's sad and scary.
Yeah, it really is.
How do we live? You know,
really, there's a book, I'll have to send it to you. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but it's the same concept of like this digital essentialism and how it's evolved over the years and how, wow, we do not need it. It's crazy. So
yeah,
let's kind of go back to this and let's talk a little bit more about that myth of I'll start when I'm ready. And gosh, I think there's so many ways that we can relate to that, especially now in this moment. How can listeners let go of that and become more confident versions of themselves? But why does this even matter?
My first recommendation is baby steps. I know at the beginning of the year, even towards the end of last year, I was in super reflective mode of what's going to change? What am I going to do? I'm going to work out 5 times a week and I'm going to start running because there's a half marathon, the Disney half marathon in April. I'm going to blah, 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 blah. And then I looked at my calendar and I laughed. Melissa,
good one.
You cannot do all of that. Yeah. Hilarious.
Love your ambition.
Yeah. And I use erasable pens. So then I erased all of that.
Smart.
And I was like, let's get realistic, chica. 2 30-minute walks without media, without your phone, without anything. 2 30-minute walks per week. That's where we're going to start.
That's great, though. I might steal that. That's great.
Go for it. Yes. Just getting into this space, getting in my own head again, because I'm constantly in a screen, on a screen, with a screen, and I need to get back into my own brain. And I think it's preparing the brain, because we know we're not ready for things. It's scary. It makes us nervous. It makes us sweat a little bit. It's frightening. We're looking at other people. Oh my gosh, I can't believe they're doing that. I would never be able to do that. But we have to come into a place where we can take the first step. And the first step looks different for all of us. And it might be a 30-minute walk, no media, but it might be a 30-minute run. It might be a 30-minute lifting session. It might be a 30-minute one-on-one with your therapist. And so step one looks different for everybody, but it has to be relative to your goal. Jumping in before you're ready doesn't mean signing up for a marathon if you've never run a 5K. Absolutely, it's motivation to get you there. But now, in the past year, if it has proven nothing else, it has shown us that ready doesn't mean prepared. And taking those steps to mentally, physically, financially be prepared to jump in, they're different. And different is relative as well. And I think when it comes to how we show up in those spaces, when we take those risks, we have to be confident. And that's where that first baby step comes in, is taking the big deep breaths and showing up authentically. I am authentically taking this risk for me, not for anyone else or a status symbol, or, you know, the intentions have to be real or else we're just kind of winging it. Mm-hmm. And I'm all for winging it, because sometimes, you know, fake it till you make it. And then you look up one day, you're like, I did it. Hey. And on the flip side of that, I know so many people that did it with just disingenuous intentions and they end up farther in than they thought they would. And I, for whatever reason, starting a podcast is coming to mind here. It's like people are like, I'm going to start a podcast. Here we go. And then like they record 3 episodes and then they're never heard from again. Right. So jumping into something before you're ready, but also before you're prepared.
Yeah. I love the way of looking at that too, because that preparedness, is that a word? That gives you confidence too. And we underestimate that.
You've laid the path, the foundation. Yeah. We have to pass level. It's like a video game. You have to pass level one before you get to level two. And you might not be ready for level two. And that's the challenge of level one. And we're not going to jump to level 10. That's ridiculous. You might die, like actually die. And I've reflected on that too. It's like, you got to start before you're ready, but are you prepared? And there's a mental push. There's a physical push in that conversation with yourself. And, you know, it's more than buying the podcast mic or booking the guests. It's digging deep into the conversations. Are you ready to go there as a host? And I'm just kind of going with this metaphor. As a host, are you ready to be a little bit vulnerable so that you can inspire that in your guests? And I talk about this with my clients all the time, is not only meeting people where they are, but also leading by example are two key pieces to a really good public speaker. To a confident speaker. You don't even need to speak in public. You can be in your room talking into your green dot on your screen. But if you're willing to be a little bit vulnerable, the audience is going to follow you there. The audience will be willing to go on that journey with you. And I think the same is true for nearly everything else that we do. From a networking event to a job interview, if we can break down that wall just a little bit more, one brick at a time, we invite our audience to come with us on that.
Yeah, I love that. Who exactly is your course for, your show and tell? Tell us a little bit more about that, who it's for, and what they can expect to get from that.
It is open to everybody. And it's amazing to me who has come through this course. We've had introverts and student affairs professionals, professional actors and fit pros come through, and the actors surprised the crap out of me. I was like, what do you want to learn from me?
Yeah.
What? And that I think is more of an exercise of their craft in a different capacity. I take a storytelling approach, and a lot of times actors are told, here's the script, say it in this way. With storytelling, it's you. It's all you. You get to write the story. You did it. You lived it. What did it feel like, smell like, taste like? Tell us. And that's different than what actors are used to. I've also been very intentional to make sure that BIPOC folks are welcome and encouraged to participate. I've made it as accessible as possible to folks. I give a $200 discount to college students.
Amazing.
If the financial investment isn't, you know, what you're able to afford, I have an open conversation, payment plans, right? I want to make sure that everyone feels like they can come in and share their story. They can turn their mess into their message. It's a powerful thing to be able to stand up on a stage and say, I went through this thing and I came out on the other side better and stronger. There's a confidence boost to saying, I went through this trauma and I turned it into my triumph. You know, there's so much going on in our brains and our lives that just taking the moment to learn how to do it, to learn how to say it, to practice saying it in a way that makes sense, is compact and clear and concise, but deliverable. Mm-hmm. And it can be life-changing, not only for the person telling the story, but for the audience members.
And it's the skill's so transferable. So I think anybody listening, regardless of where you're at in your career, I mean, that's a tool that can help you, and like you said, in so many different areas of your life. And when you get that confidence boost, that then proves to you, oh, okay, now what? I can, like, it just removes that ceiling for you in terms of dreaming bigger and getting more from life.
Yeah, absolutely. I have somebody in the last cohort that reached out and she's like, I think I want to keep going with this and I want to join like a debate team. And so it's that next level.
That.
Right? Like somebody comes in is like, I don't want to be on stage. And now she's like, I want to debate. What? Who are you?
I love that stuff too, especially as an adult. I was having this conversation mm-hmm. with a client recently too about just like all this stuff that we did in school. Why do we stop that? Why do we stop, you know, competitive sports or debate teams or like I took Toastmasters back in the day. I'm sure you're familiar with that. Like stuff like that. Like it's so good for us in so many ways. And I think we lose touch of that. And so that makes me so happy to hear. That's amazing.
I feel like our version of that in like late 20s, early 30s is when everybody starts running. That's everybody's 5K, 10K, Disney marathon, right? Because we miss that competitive edge, that competitive fire, that killer instinct, right? And I think it's like the Disney 5K that's like, I got it back.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love that. That's so fun. Melissa, this has been amazing and such great conversation. Where can our listeners find you and learn more?
You can find me on Instagram at melissa.a.ruiz and use the hashtag show and tell with Mel. You'll see past participants in their posts and stories, but that's the best way right now to find me. Website is getting updated, but it is themelissaruiz.com. Feel free to access me there as well. And no matter who you are, if you're kind of thinking, oh, I should reach out, that's something I should do, just do it. You can literally leave the email empty and just say, hi, you were on Katie's podcast, right? And that's it. And I'd be like, okay, I'll start the conversation.
Melissa, you're somebody that I feel like you could meet anybody and like, all right, let's go for coffee and your best friends. And you end up talking for like 4 hours. That's how I feel about you right now.
I try to be that person.
Instant besties. Okay, we're going to finish up this amazing conversation with a little bit of a rapid fire. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. What is your favorite podcast or book right now?
Okay. I have one for each. CEO School's podcast and the book Brag Better by Meredith Fineman.
Ooh, what's that about?
It's about how we don't brag enough about ourselves and toot our own horn without a qualifier. So we usually say not to brag, but. And her content is all about just brag, just say, I was on a TV show, I was on a podcast, and I'd love for you to watch or share.
Confidence.
Don't qualify. Yes, don't qualify it, just share it. And I love it.
Oh, that's a good one. We will link that as well. Sweet or salty?
Yes.
Both together in one.
Yes. Like chocolate covered pretzels.
That was a trick. That's the right answer.
Thank you.
Something you want less of in 2021.
Stress. I want less stress, like self-induced stress, right? I set these ridiculous timelines and expectations. I'm going to stop doing that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Love it. What do you want more of in 2021?
Fun and adventure. You know, it's don't leave the house. Okay. but I can, and I can still go for a walk, and I can still explore Harlem with my mask on. I can still explore New York City. And this year I'm going to do that.
Yeah. I put that in one of my buckets too, like more play, more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love it.
Oh, more baths too. More baths.
Right. I showered last night and I was like going to work out this morning. I thought, oh, I've got a call. Maybe I'll just keep, you know, keep this clean hair for a little bit longer. It's a rarity.
Yep. It really is.
Teaching fitness, you know that all too well. And then the last question I love to ask us this, what is the best thing that's happened to you this week?
What is the best thing that's happened this week?
I got to look
at my calendar.
Right? You're like,
is that weird?
Is that like, this is the week where at the time of this recording, you're asking people like, how was your New Year's? And they're like, huh? They give you this weird look. Like what?
Yeah
that was a week ago.
That was a really long time ago.
That was a week. 1 week. That's it. 7 days.
Honestly, you know what? It was being on this podcast this week. I think it's the collaboration. It's the meeting new people. It's kind of sitting down and reflecting. And I love that opportunity and I welcome it. So if you ever want to do a part two, I'm in.
Oh my goodness. And don't twist my arm because we will absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us today. Like I said, everybody, we will be sure to put links to get a hold of her in the show notes and can't wait to hear what you guys take away from this, because I think there's a lot of golden nuggets that can help people in so many different areas of their life.
I hope so. Thank you so much for having me. Happy Friday or whatever day that you all are listening to this. Make good choices, be safe, but like have fun.
Such a college RA thing to say right there.
Totally. It totally is.
Hey friends. Thanks again for joining us for today's episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean the world to us if you could drop a review, subscribe, because that is how we reach more fierce females looking to be the best version of themselves, just like you. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit Friends Happy Hour. If you liked this episode, don't forget to share it with a friend. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Fit Friends Happy Hour. Talk to you next time.